How's it going? My name is Connor Gilson, and I am the president of CG Consulting, and welcome to my podcast episode. I really don't remember the number. I think it's like 14 or 15 or something. I don't know. I haven't done a podcast in 2 days. I've been actually becoming irregular. I did have something happen to me Monday night, and that is the reason for the absence, if you will. But here we are tonight, and we're going to get into some awesome information. Basically, how we talked about last podcast about how we live, but just a half a second. That's all we live compared to the earth that we live on, how long it's been here. If you can liken that to it being here for a day, we only live for half a second. So this segment is about pretty much reaching out, grabbing our goals, how to do that, how to focus on things, a little bit of mindset, a little bit of attitude adjustment, a little bit of viewpoint change. I remember the first time that I thought about that I'm only alive for half a second. What can I do in that period of time? What type of people can I help? And to be honest, sometimes I don't help people. I end up, you know, causing more problem than good, but my heart's in the right place, and that's what we got to focus on. We got to focus on, you know, most of the people, if we're trying to help people, most of the people that we are going to try to help, we're going to help. But there are going to be times where, you know, maybe it's not their learning style. Maybe we're too aggressive. Maybe we're too cold or whatever, and it kind of pulls away from that. So, but tonight we got some information I got written down. It's interesting because I was looking at statistics and pretty much just jumping right into this information right now. 74% of employees want to find a new line of work, which is interesting. So 74% of people who are working currently want a new line of work. And now if you take out the percentage, and I don't even know what the numbers are for people that have just started a job or like 3 months, 6 months into a job that they really, really like, they love their job, they love it, you know, eventually they're going to get to the point where they hate it, people are going to annoy them, the job's going to annoy them, things like that, and they want to look for a new line of work. I think it interestingly brings back to the kind of mechanism that I've mentioned before, that humans, one of the number one rules in psychology is that humans want what they can't have. Which is interesting because it happens in everything. You know, you buy a new car, a couple months later you want something better. You get on a new apartment or a new house, a couple years later you want something bigger, you want something better, more extravagant. You do a vacation and you want something better. Happens in jobs as well. And I think a lot of it, there's kind of a break here because a lot of it, we kind of take everything for granted, and I think the best humans in the world take what they have in their lives currently as very important and as very special. I think that is the kind of advantage for humans. Sometimes we're always looking for the perfect thing. We're looking for the perfect car, the perfect job, the perfect mate, the perfect experience or level of happiness and things like that. And that's really not how it works. But sometimes with our job, if we are part of that 74% that want a new line of work, we'll find something interesting, right? We'll find it interesting where they won't want to quit because what? They desire their paycheck, and their paycheck or their desire for their paycheck is greater than their desire to do something else, something more meaningful, something that makes them more happy. In fact, if it wasn't, they would quit their job right on the spot today, tomorrow, whatever, and do something else. Recently, I quit a job because I viewed it as too dramatic, too much of a pain in my backside. It was not really aligning with my goals. I was starting to feel like I was too comfortable in a 9-to-5 job, and me as an entrepreneur, I wanted to get back to what I was supposed to do, and I quit. The reality is you either desire X more than Y or Y more than X. In either case, your decision is determined only by what you desire most. I was actually talking to somebody tonight that says that they want to move out. It's interesting because I've had that conversation with a few people because I do. I'm 26. A few of my friends are like, I don't really focus on age group. I have friends that are very, very old, and then I have, or much, sorry, much older than I am. Not very, very old, but much older than I am. Ones that are even in their 60s or 70s that I'm very close to. And then I have ones, 20, 21, 22, a lot in that kind of bracket. But the 21, 22 group want to move out. And it's interesting because my parents, as much as I love them, were incredibly, like, blisteringly strict. And that's because they viewed what they were doing as helpful to me and pretty much the best, that they could do for me. But I moved out at 18 years old. I always said I was going to. I remember from like 14 on, I was always like, whenever I'd have an argument with my parents, I'm gonna move out when I'm 18. I ended up moving out when I was 18. But it's interesting because I have these, and I guess you don't really understand how aggressive or how determined or how focused you are until you see someone else in your shoes, with the whole fact that I hear these people that are like, oh, I actually have a friend that actually has said that, going from it to a different friend that has been saying he's going to move out for the past 3 years. He is very upset and frustrated with his parents and wants to move out. And then he decides that he's not ready and he wants to stay there. That's what it is. In desire, that's where we operate. I had the desire from a very, very young age that when I turned 18, I would move out. And because my promises to myself and other people are stone, that's what I did. But not everybody's like that. Everybody's more, a lot of people are more reasoning. They take things into account. As much as I've grown a very large amount since I have been a child, I definitely think that one of the things that I did correctly was move out at a young age. I do love that. I do love the fact I've never regretted that in my life, even when things went to crap and I ended up becoming homeless. I still didn't regret that. And I didn't move back in with my parents at that time. But majority of people are going to desire their goals with an intensity akin to fever, obsession. And that's the secret. The desire is a passion, like being, I want to say, madly in love. If your desire, like, and that was one of the things, one of the reasons I moved out was because I wanted to be with the girl who I would end up marrying. Unfortunately, we're not still together, but I did end up marrying her. But that was a big part, and I didn't know that when all those times that I said that I was going to move out as a kid because I didn't meet her until I was 18. But that was a big part. My parents didn't want me dating her, so I moved out. That was a big part of it. I wanted freedom. I wanted to be by myself. I wanted to make my own decisions. Due to traumatic effects in the past, I matured at a very, very young age, and I felt like I was going insane living there, so I moved out. But isn't that interesting? I like that. Like, just kind of popped in my head. The desire is a passion, like being pretty much madly in love. Have you ever, ever, ever felt a desire for another person that was so consuming, so overwhelming, that you could hear the fabric of your soul like cracking or tearing? That is real desire. And that's the interesting thing with business or with your job or whatever. Once your desire reaches that point, once your desire is, and I'm watching somebody actually recently that hates their job, and I'm waiting for it to get to that point. And I'm never going to tell them. I'm never going to look them in the eyes and say, hey, you know what? You're really unhappy. You need to leave your job. This is ridiculous that you're bringing yourself to the point. You're in a perfect condition because you still live at home. You can, quit that job or start looking for another job or doing something. And I think that's the thing. Like, a lot of people will say they hate their job or they don't want to work at their job, but they won't go out and look. Or they'll go out and look for another job, but they won't do it as hard. The interesting thing is when your desire is so bound and determined to change something, nothing will stop you. I can't stop you. Your boss can't stop you. Your family can't stop you. Nothing can stop you. And I guess I'm kind of lucky in that avenue, because when I get desires or when I want something, it just burns a living hole inside of my soul to the point where I have to go for it and get it. And that's the interesting thing. I get a lot of the things that I want. And I don't say that in a way that's like super like selfish and super like full of myself that, oh, I get anything that I want. No, I set a goal and I go for it. The only thing that will ever stop me from attaining a goal is morals. That's the only thing that will ever stop it. If I feel like I'm breaching someone else or I'm crossing a line, then I won't go as hard for it. But if I have a goal that doesn't cross any of my moral ground, and trust me, my moral ground is set there because, like I said in the previous module about mindset, it is part of my operating system. The reason people like me and are drawn to me is because my moral system is so cemented. But if I have a goal that doesn't cross one of my moral boundaries, it will happen. You cannot stop me. Your friend, your parents, my parents, no force in this world will stop me from achieving it. It will happen. The only thing that will stop it is me if it crosses a moral line. One of my favorite things to do, because we think about being happier, and it's interesting because a lot of the things that ruin our happiness are negatives in our life. And if we listen to ourselves talk, those negatives come out a lot. So what one of my favorite things to do, and I've had some complaints about how on a podcast they're driving and they don't want to pull over to the side of the road and write down the exercise. But one of my favorite things to do is writing down five of the most negative things in my life. That's right. It's weird, right? They're like, whoa, that's weird. Like, Connor, you're telling me to write down the five negative things in my life? Like, most people want us to look at the positive. Okay, bear with me for a second. So five things that you hate most about your life. These negatives are going to typically relate to work, personal finance, relationships, appearance, or living conditions, right? So let's break these down. Work, complaining about how you don't like your job and you want something better. Personal finance, I don't have enough money. I can never go out with friends when they want to do something. I can't buy that new car I want. I feel like I'm always living paycheck to paycheck. I have anxiety and stress because I'm always on the edge. If something breaks or something happens, then my whole life goes to crap. Relationships, like I'm really not happy in the relationship I have. I'm really not happy with being alone, but I'm super freaking picky about every single detail of my, you know, perfect, you know, date or whatever. Appearance, you know, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, it's ridiculous. A couple months ago, somebody said that I was too thin, and I literally could not stop laughing. I was literally at Best Buy and I could not stop laughing because it's insane how much body shaming is going on now. And I actually like understand it. Like, it doesn't bother me. I choose to be the way I want to be. If I wanted to go to gym, if I wanted to prioritize gym over making money, then I would. But I don't. Money is more important to me. Investments is more important to me. Building my empire is more important to me. And anybody that really can't align to that, then I don't care. I move on. They're not part of my life. Or living conditions. Hey, I don't want to live at my parents' house. I don't want to live with this roommate. I don't want to share this apartment with somebody. I want to live on my own. In fact, when I broke up with my ex, a lot of people told me, get a roommate. I don't get along with people in a close quarters thing unless they're very special to me. I did live with a friend and his parents in South Carolina, and that actually went pretty well, minus one person, and I won't say who it is, but it went pretty well for my standards. But that's what they break down to. The five things are usually in those categories. Once you identified those items, compare them to your goals. Are your goals aligned to this list? Do your goals directly address the negative forces in your life? So it's interesting because I'll bring up that person again. They don't like their job. They hate it. And I understand because their boss seems like an asshole. Ooh, I guess I have to make it explicit now. Oh well. And hey man, you gotta just, yeah, let it flow. And then they don't want to live at home because their parents are pretty strict, I will say that. But yeah. And they want to create their own business. They want to build their own, you know, brand, things like that. So are your goals aligned to that list? Do your goals directly address the negative forces in your life? If so, you have perfect alignment. Your desire to change those negatives that you have will be high. And for that reason, the probability of you achieving your goals will also be high. So make sure your negatives and your goals align. But that's the thing, bringing it back to desire. When it comes to the big things in life, to scaling mountains or slaying dragons, your desire must be as hot as the sun. An emotion so intense, it prevents sleep and keeps you yearning for the break of dawn. It's interesting because Gary Vaynerchuk talks about how you need to, if you want something bad enough, you will be excited to wake up. You will be excited about Monday. You won't be excited about Friday and having the weekend off. You'll be excited about working and building your empire. And it's interesting because it does take a while to get used to, especially if you're used to the 9-to-5 jobs. I get 2 days off, or I get the weekend off, and I like those days off and things like that. But if you try 3 weeks or 2 months or whatever it takes for you to click into this gear, which I've clicked into again recently, and I gotta tell you, I love it. Like, I love being an entrepreneur because I can work, and then when I'm feeling kind of tired, okay, I'll take a day off, and boom, right back into it. So that's the thing. In order to want to reach your goals, you have to have a fire and an energy that cannot be put out. No matter how many buckets of water you throw on the sun, if you could even get to the sun without burning, by the way, and melting, probably not a pleasant experience, I assume. If you could somehow get there, how many buckets of water would it take to try to put out the sun? It's not going to happen. It's literally not going to happen. In fact, if you were indestructible and your bucket was indestructible and the water did not start evaporating until you pitched the bucket, the water would evaporate before it even hits the sun. There's nothing you could do. You could literally have super speed and throw billions of buckets of water at the sun and it will not put it out. Before it even touches it, evaporates it. That is what your goals and your drive should be. No one, nothing, no force in the world can put it out. When that happens, that's how you get goals. But you have to be honest with yourself. You have to ask yourself, how much do you really want it? Would you be willing to risk your savings? Spend a time away from your friends and loved ones? Work endless hours? I mentioned before that there's some days I work 19 hours straight. Some people will do all that and more. Now keep that in mind. They'll do all of that and more and they won't hit their goals because over time they'll eventually fade. So if you fade, you're going to get to this point where all of that work and effort you put in is now evaporated, just like that water. So you want to make sure that your goals can never be put out. If you're going to start working on something, and it's fun because it gets easier. As you start working on something, going towards a goal, it will get easier. You'll have hurdles and problems that come in the way, but you will actually get it done if your resolution is absolute. So you have to ask yourself, how great is my desire? Really, like, how great is it? And it's interesting because bringing it back to the mind is a very powerful thing. The mind will believe and it will affect your surroundings. Now, we mentioned before about how law of attraction is important, how our mind is really powerful, how mind is pretty much the best piece of machinery in the universe. But it's interesting. There's a documented case, very well documented case, where doctors incorrectly diagnosed a man with late stage liver cancer, telling him he only had weeks or months to live. The man who was diagnosed died a few months later, as predicted. No big deal, right? It's interesting. On his autopsy, the misdiagnosis was discovered. There was no liver cancer. In fact, other than being dead, he was perfectly healthy at the age of 45. You want to talk about how powerful the mind is there? I was misdiagnosed. I was misdiagnosed with dilated cardiomyopathy, which means your heart is too big and it creates palpitations, which is the which is the heart going way too fast, and then arrhythmias, which is where it like beats slowly. Okay? I was diagnosed with that, given medication. I believed all of that because I was getting expert advice from a doctor, and I had a heart attack at 19 years old. Pretty rough, huh? I know some people are like, oh, you can't have it. Look it up. You can. Trust me. It was fun. Big fan of heart attacks at age 19. At least I got it out of the way. Hopefully, I don't have one later on. Your mind, if you believe something, it will happen. The part I forgot to leave out is they gave me actually a lifespan, too. Fortunately, I'm still here because I actually went to a doctor that knew what he was doing. And apparently, it turned out to be something super simple. I was deathly low on potassium, deathly low. And I had something out with some nerve by my chest. I don't remember what it was. It was a while ago. But whatever. But the reality is, what your mind believes is law. Because you'll act in a manner consistent with what your beliefs are. And if you believe that success is impossible, there's no way you can achieve it. So you'll act in a manner consistent with the belief and accept defeat quickly, or not even try in the first place. It's interesting because if you were to take fleas and you put them in a jar, the only way to keep them from jumping out is to put a lid on it, right? A physical barrier, which happens, by you putting the lid on. What's interesting though is if you watch the fleas, they'll keep hitting the lid, right? Like popcorn. But with time, the popping slows and eventually stops altogether. The fleas will actually literally adjust the height of their jump to avoid hitting the ceiling. Once you watch this happen, and I've done this, it's pretty interesting. Once they stop jumping high to hit the ceiling, they hit the metal lid, ding, ding, ding. Once you hear the stopping and you watch them and they're only jumping like a little bit, you can actually unscrew the lid and take it off, and the fleas will not jump out. Not one of them. When I read this the first time, I immediately tried this out. I went around to all my friends that had dogs and cats. I was like, hey, do you have fleas in your house? I caught fleas and put them in a jar and did this. Were we talking about earlier about how focused and dedicated you are to something? Because I feel like me catching fleas, which is pretty crazy, and doing this experiment just because I wanted to see if it was true or not, is pretty much the hallmark of determination and focus. But I'll leave that for you guys to decide. But I took off the lid and they would not jump out. Fleas are then trapped by the belief that they'll hit the ceiling if they keep jumping. It's actually painful. Or they find it uncomfortable or whatever. I don't know if they have pain receptors. I didn't go in that deep. But they don't like hitting the ceiling. So once they adjust to it, they will not jump out of the, even though they can feel like the difference in like pressure and air and things like that. They won't jump higher than their belief barrier. Which is funny because we think of this little tiny thing, right? This really annoying little thing that bites us and creates little bumps, but has the brain of like, I don't even know if they have brains. They have like this tiny little brain. If they do, and then we laugh, we think like, huh, that's funny. But is it though? Because I would say about 80%, if not more, of humans have a barrier belief like that. We used to hitting something, ding, ding, this isn't working, this wasn't working, this isn't working, all right, I guess we'll just do this then. And then when the lid comes off, we don't care, we don't notice it, we just keep jumping the way we normally do. Is that you? Like, honestly, all jokes aside, purely, is that you? Is that what you have become? Have you reduced yourself to a flea that's hit a lid a couple times and said, no, I don't like this, I'm going to just keep jumping? And then when that barrier is gone, that physical barrier, the thing that actually blocks you, is gone, do you keep jumping with that mental barrier or with that psychological barrier or with that belief barrier? It's funny because studies have demonstrated that people with low self-belief have an exceptional rate of failure. Financial difficulty, poor health, troubled relationships, and this usually comes true for them. They believe that in their head and it happens. They're insecure. They don't think that they can do this, and that's exactly what happens. The mindset that you have will create a self-fulfilling, self-perpetuating prophecy. If you do not believe that you can succeed, if you don't believe that you can succeed, your goals are going to be tougher than they really are, and you're going to give up more easily. And when you give up, your failure is going to reinforce those low self-beliefs, those low self-esteems, which makes you give up even more easier in the future. I remember my parents had a goal with us where we'd sit down and do Bible reading. I know some of you people may not believe in God or the Bible, whatever. That's not the point I'm trying to get to right now. But we would want to do the Bible reading. And we'd say like tomorrow or the next day, or we'd start now, and then we'd get easily like distracted and a couple days forget and stuff like that. With me, when I tried it, when I was first married, I went to say it, we'll start tomorrow. I said, nope, we're going to start tonight. And I did it for 2 years straight. Longer streak than my parents ever pulled. Much longer streak than my parents ever pulled. And that's the reality. Okay? If you give up easily, it will make it easier for you to give up. Any limiting belief, any shortcoming, any shallow thought will perpetuate further versions of that. That's how it works. It's interesting because I see people that work tirelessly, two jobs, maybe three. They work weekends, they work nights through sickness and strife to provide for their family, their kids, their spouse. And they work crazy, endless measures. And it's not that they're lazy. They didn't shrink. Like, these people I've watched don't shrink from the daily grind. They're hard workers, even by my standards. Yet they didn't believe in themselves either. And they didn't believe they could achieve success or something better for themselves. And that is why they failed. That's it. That's all it is. That's why they failed. Because they didn't believe in themselves. Interesting. I was having a friend that I was talking about business, and he said that no matter how strong he focuses on being better at what he does, he feels that his insecurities that he hides from people are eventually going to spill out. And I looked at him and I said, I don't really take you as the insecure type. I mean, like, yeah, there's some borderline like insecurities, but I don't think of you as as an insecure person. He said, oh, but I am. I said, but you seem very confident. You seem very focused. He's like, no. It's interesting because my job in life is to analyze people and find what they're good and what they're bad at. I can honestly say that he is very, very focused on his business and the way he works. And I can guarantee that most of those insecurities are in his head. And I would have not noticed them because they're not very prominent in his business or his life. But you know what's funny is because he believes in them so much, he then vocalized them to me. And my mind tries to make the connections. Lucky for me, I have a lot of control over my mind and I settle that down and be like, nope. You notice the pure version first. Don't start letting this interfere you. One of the things that I hated about my ex when she would cook dinner is she would then belittle herself or belittle her cooking. She would say, oh, this is dry, this is stuff. And she could literally make me find something that I liked and make me hate it. To the point, there's one time where I literally threw up. When we are doing something, whether it's a service or a sale or a product, if we tell anybody that, hey, this is our insecurity or this is why it's bad, they're going to believe us. And it's the same thing with your mind. If you keep telling yourself that you're bad at something, there's some things I'm bad at, and I will very, very bluntly say it. I am not the best at spelling and grammar. I have gotten better, though. God awful at math. Thank God I carry a calculator in my pocket all day, my iPhone. Literally had a conversation the other day with one of my friends. I added a tip, and he's like, really, you don't know the tip? I'm like, nope, I'm not even going to try. I'm like, it's not my expertise. I'm not good at that. But if you are doing something, say you're doing real estate and you think you're awful at it, and you keep telling yourself you're awful at it, guess what? You're awful at it. Go get a new job. Because as long as you keep telling yourself that, you are not going to get better. No matter how many books you read, no matter how much rah-rah, motivation speakers you listen to, nothing, like I said before, your mind is the gate. What you believe is what's going to happen. Interesting thing though, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. It's interesting because a lot of people have given me criticism about how I'm very, very judgmental of the people I have around in my life. But this is the rule. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Interesting point though. I do teach and consult with a lot of people. In fact, two of my best friends right now, I am teaching. In many ways, I am above them on because I'm their mentor, their instructor. But I have three, if not more, people that I associate with that are much higher than I am. And then if you think about all the books I read and you took all the books and turned it into one person, they're much higher than I am. And that's who I'm learning from, or the mentors, or the videos I watch, or the audiobooks I listen to, or the experiences I get from going out in the field and actually doing it. I'm just checking my time here. Make sure I'm not going crazy. So, what I want you to do is take a piece of paper and list the five people, or if you're driving in your car and you can't pull over because you listen to my podcast in the car, I guess it's better than not listening to them at all. Like I said though before, where's my mic? Testing 1, 2, 3. Like I've said before, I would prefer you to listen to this where you are sitting in a calm place, whether in your bed at night or in a chair or whatever, where you can take notes and actually apply the stuff. Or if you're really good and you can take mental notes, that works too. We all get sued easily, and I understand it. I listen to audiobooks sometimes in the car, but it drives me nuts because I can't pay attention or take really mental notes on it. I like books. I like sitting down and reading Kindles. Kindle books. There we go. I'm gonna read Kindles. Like I have multiple ones here. But take a piece of paper and list the five people you spend the most time with. Then next to each name, estimate the person's annual income. So in other words, take an educated guess at how much money they approximately make. Add these numbers together, and if you want to, you can go ask them. If you got the balls to do that, ask them how much you make a year. Okay? There you go. Make sure they're your close friends, though, okay? Don't be like, well, I'm trying to see which people I should cut out of my life. Yeah, don't say that. Take it. So if you can't do that, if you don't got the stones to do it, take an educated guess, okay? Add those numbers together, divide by five, and the result will closely approximate your annual income. And this is gonna freak you out. It's gonna be literally like a bullhorn in your ear. Or like the ice bucket challenge. Remember that for ASL? Or I think that's what it was for. Did I just say American Sign Language? Okay, we're gonna ignore my brain just taking a dump there. But I feel like nope, I'm not even gonna try. I'm not even gonna try to redeem that. That was horrible, awful. We're moving on. Let's go. But literally is going to wake you up. I've done this with countless coaching clients, countless pro bonos. I actually am now thinking about doing it with another person, and they're probably listening. I'm coming to ask you this question, so get ready for it if you are listening. Five people, how much they make, then add those numbers together and then divide by five. It's gonna be very close to your income. That's the reality. You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. If you spend time with people who are poor, you will become the sixth poor person. And poor can be very, very subjective. You can focus on, if you didn't want to do income, you can do a happiness level out of 1 out of 10. Okay? How happy is somebody? Don't rate me. I'm all over the place. Nah, I'm mostly happy. It just last couple days been pretty rough, but what are you that you're going to be the average of them. That's just how it works. So what can you do? How can you fix that? Pretty much everything. Surround yourself with successful people and books, okay? Magazines, online videos, go to the library and read all you can. Discover a role model. Spend time with your teachers. Meet their friends. Find a mentor. Out of the two things that I can recommend any of my clients, or even people in general, let's say people in general, because I guess clients are kind of biased because I'm technically their mentor. Two things, books and mentor. Books and mentor. Books and mentor. Is that in your head yet? Let me say it a couple more times. Books and mentor. Okay, you get the point. Read books about people that are where you want to be. Find a mentor with where you want to be. Very cautious with the mentor picking, okay? Find people that are experts in their areas. Experts in their areas does not mean that they show off their riches very, very exuberantly. There's things that I buy. I have a $4,000 55-inch TV. Okay? I have a sound bar, which is normally 200 bucks. That's 1200 bucks. I have $50 light bulbs in almost every light socket in my house. Reason I buy those things is because they help my happiness and my experience. But if you were to look at my life, you could not tell how much money I have. And that's the way I want it. Because I'm investing, I'm building my empire from within. I don't need people constantly asking to borrow money. I don't need people to constantly think I'm better than them. I don't want that. I have money invested in the things that I like and I enjoy when I sit down from a hard day at work. I sit down and watch my TV. But I also have things that are really good. I have a $8,000 car, 2012 Ford Focus. Not that big of a deal. It's all I needed. I wanted to get my dream car. I decided not to, and I got something a little cheaper. I'm getting my dream car next time. Okay? So it doesn't always mean that they show their money. Most people that show their money don't have money. Just a little tip, okay? Just a little tip for me. And that's wisdom that goes beyond my 26 years, okay? Most people, I'm lucky I learned that. Most people that show their money in everything, the $6,000 suits, actually. I don't have any $6,000 suits, but I do have some kind of expensive suits, but that's for business, so whatever. The Rolex, the, Jag or the Mercedes or the, big extravagant house. You have money until you spend it. Always keep that in mind. So find mentors that have money and maintain money, invest money, and then buy things with their assets. So if they want to buy a Porsche, they bought the Porsche because their assets paid for it. Not debt. Debt does never should pay for a liability. Okay? If you have a liability, which is a car, a house, sorry, let you know, house is a liability. If you don't believe me, go read Rich Dad Poor Dad. Unless it's a rental property, you're making money from it, you're dumping money into it every single year. That's a liability. Okay? So do that. All those things that I mentioned earlier, read books, things like that. Whatever your goals are, just discover the path taken by those before you. In fact, I built a business plan for a friend of mine by looking at the people in her company and other companies in that kind of caliber and what they're doing the best. Okay? That's super simple when you think about it. Humans, we like to overcomplicate things, So now I kind of want to do like an illustration. Wow, I have a lot of notes here. I don't think I'm going to be able to get through all of them, but we'll try. Imagine that you own a factory, okay, with a single machine, just one. Every dollar the factory earns comes from that one machine. When running at its peak performance, blah, 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 bing, ding, ding, the machine spews money like an oil well, okay? But when it breaks down, that runs dry. You want to buy another machine to diversify your risk and income, but you can't because the machine is the last of its kind. Nothing can replace it. Once it wears out, that's it. No more machine, no more income. You'll have to close the factory when that day comes. Knowing this, you do everything humanly possible to keep the machine running smoothly. You invest in the machine religiously, even buying a blanket to keep it warm at night. If the machine stops, your income will stop. That machine is your greatest asset. Pause for dramatic effect. Guess what? That machine is you. Like I've said before, I've hired people for my company, and I will promise you, I want, and I wish, okay? I wish I could say I was wrong here, and I hope one day I'm proved wrong. When you run a company, there's no one that's working for you that will ever give a crap as much as you do. You are that machine. You can work harder to hire the right people so it propels that machine because not everybody can be 100% close to you. People are going to excel at different things. And you, if you know how to do that and build a team, you can build on that 89 or 90% of what you're capable of doing. Build, if you have 10 people running at 89% capacity compared to your 100, or even if you're at 60, there, I would say 60 is low. Let's say 78%. You have 10 people running at 78% of your capacity, well, then it makes up, right? Okay. The best investment you can make, however, is an investment in yourself. And it's funny, it literally blows my mind, okay? It's interesting, when I was running my business and I would offer investment or financing for my marketing, one of the things I said is, you know what? It's funny to me that people will go into a jewelry store and finance a ring for their spouse to get married. They will finance their wedding. They will finance their vehicle. In fact, I go into furniture stores. You can get furniture financed. Are we really, what? You can get TVs financed. You can go to Best Buy, get the Best Buy card. Everything. But it's interesting because they don't bat an eye. Nobody bats an eye about, financing some toy, but they literally have a stroke or a seizure when they think about financing themselves. These are things we're going to throw out. Even this TV I'm looking at in front of me, that is incredible. I'm eventually going to throw that out. But when it comes to investing in our greatest asset, ourselves, we pause. We cuddle our wallet. No, it's okay. No. I don't know if I should do this. No. And you hesitate. You say, oh, knowledge is expensive. Oh, it might not work. Oh, I don't want to do this. Reality is this. If you invest in yourself, you will always use it over and over again. I have spent, I don't even want to think of the number of hours in my life that I spent studying psychology. And if I were to think of it in a negative way, I would literally flip out that I spent all this time, not only learning psychology, but teaching it to other people, bringing people to, you know, social settings, clubs, bars, business meetings, to watch people, to teach psychology. All that time in my life, I literally cannot think of the number, but I assume it is ridiculous. Half my friendships I put like crazy amounts of time in. If they prove loyal to me and they prove true to me, I will put hundreds of thousands of hours in my friendships. I don't have a lot of friends, but the friends that I do have are freaking insane how many hours I put into them. And it's funny because a lot of people say, oh, knowledge is expensive. You want to know it's expensive? Try ignorance. Ignorance is pretty darn expensive. In fact, I would go as far as saying it's the most expensive thing in the world. So if you're scared of not learning and you want to build your own your business, and it's funny because there's a lot of good information that you can learn for free. A lot of the stuff, I've already have people messaging me about this podcast, and I only have, like, I'm not going to lie to you, I have like 4 or 5 listeners to this podcast right now. It's in its early stage. I'm not marketing it. I'm just watching it right now. Okay. I have people that have messaged me or called me on the phone and said, this is really good stuff, man. Like, you're putting a lot of effort into this. It's great. And I've had people that listen to close friends of mine that listen to 2 podcasts and decide not to listen to it. Yep. There's a lot of free information that you can use. But go out and pay for some information, whether it's books, whether it's a course. Cut that learning curve in half there. We're at 47 minutes, okay? Knowing the path. Knowing what to do is only half the equation. The other half is knowing how to do it. The only way you're going to learn how to do it is to learn from people that have already taken the journey themselves. You can come up with little cool twists and turns that give you the edge, but learn from somebody else to give you the foundation. It's funny because, like, learning how to work out, and I haven't done it in a while, and they get made fun of that, but if you go to gym, you may know the routine to follow, but do you know how to lift weights? Do you know how to correctly perform a squat, a shoulder press, a seated row? Where do you position your feet? How do you bend your knees? How do you stabilize your lower back? What's the full range of motion? How do you breathe? When do you breathe? Knowing what and knowing how are 2 different things. And it's interesting because, like, at the gym, like, I thought, oh, you just lift. What about isolating muscles? What about, you know, proper, you know, lift technique? What, literally, there's so much just in going to the gym. How long to hold it? How quick you're raising your arm? It's insane. So if there's that much detail in going to a gym and lifting a piece of metal, no offense to my friends that are very into bodybuilding and put their effort or work or weight loss, I absolutely have the most purest and incredible amount of respect for you guys, okay? I wish I had enough time to, you know, go to the gym as often as I wanted to. I don't. But the people that do and that's their focus, I absolutely respect it. But if there's that much focus and detail and information in lifting a piece of metal, because that's what it is, like I said, no offense, lifting a piece of metal, how much more complicated is business? How much more complicated is building an empire? How much more complicated is it building a team? How much more complicated is it to keep motivated and focused when you just want to give up because life has punched you in the face a couple times? Interesting thought, and I think this might be one of the last things because we are at 49 minutes. When you buy something, I want you to think about how many hours of your life this is going to screw you up. It screwed me up, okay? Oh my God, this isn't my like favorite thing to teach. When you buy something, when you go into Hollister, or you go into J. Crew or Calvin Klein or Nordstrom to buy something. Because I have friends and I have, clients I teach that say, like, how do you not buy things when you really like are bad at spending? When you pick up something and you are about to buy it, I want you to look at the price tag, go find a mirror, and figure out how much of your life you have to spend to buy it. Because we think dollar amount, right? We buy a t-shirt for 40, 30, or 40 bucks. And I know there's some people, oh, I only buy stuff at Walmart. Okay, good. I'm glad you're already ahead of us here. But I'm not gonna lie, I have, shirts that I like. I actually think this shirt, yeah, this shirt's a Supreme thing, although I got this for, oh no, this is Calvin Klein. Calvin Klein shirt. But you buy a shirt and it's 30, 20 or 30 bucks, okay? How many hours of your life, because you've taken your dollar amount an hour, right? So say you make, let's say you're, because a lot of the people I'm talking to are, around my age. Say you work in retail, and I'm just using this example. You may make more, okay? But same principle. Say you work in retail and you make like $11 an hour, okay? And you're out and you're gonna buy a $20 or $30 shirt. That's 2 or 3 hours of your life that you are going to use to buy that shirt. Does that shake you? Does that like bother your soul at all, like it bothers mine? Like, don't get me wrong, I love buying new things, especially like I'm starting to get into clothes and like fashion and stop looking like I just rolled off the streets out of my cardboard box. I was really good at suits. My suits are on top, but like I have two outfits, my friends say. You got the suit, and then you got this like gym shorts and t-shirt thing. And I'm like, yeah. But so I'm all for like getting the shirts. In fact, I'm like working on my normal casual wardrobe right now. But whenever you buy something, you buy a PlayStation, 300 bucks, okay? How many hours of your life are you exchanging for that item? You're buying a TV, you're buying a $1,200 TV. How many hours of your life are you using to spend that? See, money is easy. It's easy for us to, think about it. But how much of our life are we losing buying something? It's interesting because here's the thing. There was an interview with a guy talking to somebody that owned a fitness business, and the guy said, "My employee, he's a monkey." Be and I'm just gonna read this because these aren't my words, and I don't want to take credit for them. Because, he, and when he asked, "Why do you think he's a monkey?" he said, "Because this is this." Business owner talking about his employee because he makes minimum wage, because he comes in early and leaves at noon, and another monkey takes his place. If he quits, I'll find a new monkey. I'm the owner, he's the worker. I keep the profits, he does the work. I drive a Porsche and sail in the Caymans, he drives a Chevy and hangs out at the mall. And if he sits at the front desk long enough staring out the window, he'll begin to wonder why he's not driving a Porsche and sailing around in the Caymans. But the answer will always be the same because he's a worker, not an owner. And that's the reality. In order to get ahead in life, you have to become an owner. I don't know what they teach in college, but you will not be wealthy by being a worker. Never will happen. But you have to own something, whether it's a business, real estate, gold, silver, whatever. Okay? You need to own it. And that's pretty much the tip. But remember that. The key point I want you to remember, when you buy something for 85 bucks, how many hours of your life are you exchanging to buy that item? All right, guys, that's about it. We're almost at the 60-minute mark, and I don't like going over 60 minutes. I like to cut my threshold here. I will talk to you guys hopefully tomorrow night. I got to get back in the rhythm of doing one of these every night, but I do want to start going to the gym because I am not really feeling myself, question mark. I want to get a good balance. I want to do everything, but sometimes I overwhelm myself. Whoops, knocked the earbud and mic right out of my ear. Anyways, that's about it, guys. Have a great night. Once again, my name is Connor Gilson, and I am the president of CG Consulting. See you tomorrow.